Welcome to Dice in Mind, a podcast hosted by Brad Brown and Jason Kaufman to explore the intersection of life, games, science, music, philosophy, and creativity through interviews with leading creatives. All are welcome in this space.
When you and I started talking, I think we, our first episode dropped, what, April of 21?
Yeah.
And we spent, during the pandemic, a good late summer, into the fall, into the winter, you know, talking about the idea, you know, I can't remember the term, you know, working through it. What did we want to do?
We spent a solid 6 months.
More, I think.
Talking and writing. Just doing the legwork to figure out what we want to do.
Yeah, and not even the technical stuff. You know, just the idea in our heads, when we hit record, what are we going to talk about? If we can't, we didn't want it random. No one would, I mean, barely anyone listens as it is, but no one would listen if it was just us randomly talking, let's be honest. I mean, nobody around us who are considered our friends listen to us when we talk. We settled on this idea of the intersection of gaming, tabletop gaming, analog gaming, I like calling it, and life. Mm-hmm. When we talk about, you know, society, faith, economics, everything, and how tabletop role-playing games can interact, how it affects us in the interaction.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. Yeah. And potentially, if we don't come across as too presumptuous, how it might affect others.
Yeah.
Reason I bring that up is because one of our first guests ever,
our second guest and our very first didn't already know them guest.
Yes.
Yes.
Is returning to join us tonight.
So much fun.
And the discussion is going to be, and I'll let you talk about this, discussion is going to be around the book. And it's just funny that he was early on in our tenure doing this when we were still getting our feet under us. Mm-hmm. And it feels like the book fits right into our kind of our mission, if you will.
Almost perfectly. Well, well done, sir. Well done.
Yes.
So a happy third podcast anniversary to you, my friend.
Yes.
As this, I wasn't
is
even
that
thinking
a,
about
it. Is that a podiversary? And
a
not
podiversary. I stopped myself. Yeah.
Happy third. A castiversary?
Happy third podversary to you.
Yeah.
As this drops as an episode, it will have been 3 years and 11 days. Right. This is the first one after the 3 year mark. Now, how about
I want you to before I'm going to cut you off.
Yeah.
Honestly, how long did you think we would be doing this when we first talked about
honestly?
It, yeah.
Have we
knowing,
ever talked
knowing
about
me,
this?
No. Knowing me and everything that's gone on over the past 3 years, you and I've talked about it a little bit here and there. But how long did you really think we would be doing this?
I mean, there's a chance to be candid in front of the world and maybe to shame you. Oh, I
no, you can do both. That's totally fine.
Oh, I will.
Okay.
That's a great question. How long did I think? I mean, we did not understand what we were getting into, nor did we have any inkling of the dividends this would pay in our lives. Personally, more than anything, the sheer amount of joy this would bring us. How long I thought when we recorded that first episode that night, I thought if we can get 5 or 10 episodes,
that's what I figured.
We'll see. And honestly, maybe I'm making this up. Maybe I am confabulating a memory, but I recall thinking, you're going to flake out around 5 or 6.
That's what I was waiting for.
Especially because we were doing it bi-weekly. And we were doing everything once a month.
We started it monthly.
Monthly. You are right. So monthly. So we were doing it so slowly. And we were talking about it a lot. Mm-hmm. It was hard to schedule.
Yep.
Granted, that was because of what was going on just with us.
It was harder to schedule, believe it or not. I think looking back on it, It was hard to schedule me. I just used this term before I hit record, I think. Trying to get me scheduled was like herding cats. And I just knew in my, I never talked about it, but I thought in my head, if we get to five episodes, I think he's going to be like, wow, I'm surprised it lasted
I five six
that
I was and
long.
I was so pleased. Brad, other than your digestive cycle, these 3 years have been the most regular you've ever been.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, now how about this to put it in perspective? I just looked back at our list.
Yeah.
So in a few minutes, we're going to share with our audience our second chat with author, creator, writer Jeff Ashworth. This is episode 120.
Was he at 20?
He was a 20.
Oh, Jeff, you literally hit us 100 episodes apart. That
Yeah,
is
I mean,
awesome.
so we'll see you, Jeff, for 320, 321, whatever. So, I
No,
mean, I guess
220, 220.
220, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. See,
Yeah.
now I think it's going to go on forever.
But now we at least know what our 220th episode is scheduled
That's
to be.
right. So, I mean, if you really want to be technical, then I mean, so that was 99 episodes, but still, yeah,
Yeah.
100 episodes. Wow. No, 100 episodes later. Wowie wow. I mean, that's just so much has changed. So we should take a sec, 3 years just to look back. I mean, my God, to think of what has happened
You
with
still
this.
had hair.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. It was just slightly darker, not much.
Okay.
The goatee was slightly darker.
Yeah.
It's all the
Yeah,
good
you're looking
living.
a little bit like a skunk there on the bottom. You know that?
I've been called worse.
You get this, get the
Yeah.
stripe. Although mine is now completely white. But
Yes, that has been recent.
oh yeah. Yeah.
Back in my day.
Yeah.
So you think 3 years ago this month, April, what has transpired for Dyson Mind? What has transpired for our personal lives, our families, our professional endeavors, what has happened in the world? It's been a busy, at sometimes intense 3 years. And so now, I mean, we are so pleased, everyone, to have Jeff Ashworth back.
Yeah.
And I know we say this all the time, but man, those last two episodes with Al and Jim were so much fun. And then the episodes we have lined up. We promised you guys in year three we were going to venture into new territory. We are venturing into new territory. We're going to have a bunch of firsts for this podcast,
And
in
I
terms of
even
whom we
mentioned before
interview.
you and I were having a discussion before we hit record, and I
Yeah.
even said, oh, we'd really be stretching the mandate of the podcast, but there's a really interesting topic I think would be worth having, you know.
We're yeah between yeah between the episode, the interviews I should say, and some of the topics we're going to discuss, even just the two of us. Yep.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think everybody in, and then we'll get over to the interview, because undoubtedly you've heard enough of, from us. But in moving into year three now, God, how is that even possible? Moving into year three now, I think occasionally you and I, Brad, have talked about what, just very occasionally, but maybe a few times in this podcast year, just having a discussion on a topic, kind of going back to our podcast roots, but also because it's what's going on for us. We think it's
Yeah.
relevant. We think our audience will be interested, and if they're not, so be it. But also, it's relevant.
Yeah.
So stay tuned, everybody.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think every once in a while, you know, we talked about it. We had our little dalliance with the off week shorter episodes, and it didn't click
You
for
know
us.
what? We've experimented, and I think that's good.
Yeah, that's good. But you know, there are some things that I think, let's be honest, we attract adults, educated adults, and I don't necessarily have to say, you know, from a university or something like that, folks that are educated in whatever way,
And curious.
and
Yep.
curious,
Yep.
or are in their 40s, maybe 50, and
Maybe.
maybe 50.
Hopefully their
But
30s and 60s as well.
yeah, but you know, the idea of how, you know, this idea of how can games interact, or how can games affect how we interact with life? If you look at life as as its own cognizant sphere, how does gaming affect us interacting in that? So, and this, and it's couldn't be perfect, more perfect timing to have Jeff on.
Jeff Ashworth is the author and editor of the best-selling Game Master series of 5e source books, including the Game Master's Book of Random Encounters, the Game Master's Book of Non-Player Characters, and the Game Master's Book of Traps, Puzzles, and Dungeons. When he isn't working on special projects for Media Lab Books, he enjoys playing and designing games with his friends. He and his longtime campaign companion slash wife live in Virginia with their dogs Zelda and Lincoln. Jeff, it is so good after 2.5 years to have you back. Thanks for coming back to Dice and Mind.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
I don't want us to sound like either of us, Brad or I, are being Darth Sidious, but it would be appropriate to say over the past few years, we have watched your career with great interest.
Are we going to have Cerveza's Cristal? Is that what's happening next?
That sounds good. So just to put this in perspective for those who are listening who haven't been with us since the very beginning, you first came on the podcast in October of 21, which for so many reasons seems like forever ago to many of us. And we were talking about this before we hit record, but you were our second ever interview and our first ever interview with someone we didn't already personally know. And, you know, we expressed off air our gratitude to you for that because it really kind of opened Pandora's box for us. But at the time, as Brad and I were getting back into RPGs in general, including but certainly not limited to D&D, Brad was all into random tables and stuff like that, and it was all new to me. And I think your Game Master's Book of Random Encounters, I think that's the one that, right, Brad? That one had just
it
come
is.
out, or at least it hit our radar.
Right.
I think it had hit our radar.
Yeah.
And of course, there would be a number of others in the intervening couple of years. I mean, I've often wondered, like, how are you finding time to be that creative? I mean, it's amazing. But so we've talked about, like, wouldn't it be great if Jeff would come back? But what finally, like, crossed the line for us was this beautiful little book. And I say little because it's one of these great form factors that's very handholdable, right? It's not the big 8.5 by 11, but Everything I Need to Know I Learned from RPGs, A Player's Handbook for the Game of Life. I saw the title, I saw that you were the author, and I immediately ordered. And and I have to say it did not disappoint. And so I'm just going to say, if you're listening and you haven't bought this yet, you should. I'm going to ignore the content for a sec. The printing kind of blew me away. I mean, I think, you know, what is it? Media Lab. It's
Media
right,
Lab Books.
You, everything you put out is beautiful. Like, that's one of the things that attracted Brandon and me right away. But like, you seriously upped your game with this book, like, just to hold it. And again, is it Chris Seaman, the illustrator, like, just really cool art. Like, even my 16-year-old, she saw that I had a page open. I don't remember. It was for one of the classes in here. And she's like, and she's kind of an artist. And she's like, oh, that's really cool. And I'm like, well, score. But I mean, gotta know, like, why this book? Like, where did this come from? How did you do this?
So I can, first of all, thank you for having me back. And thank you for maintaining interest and feeling like something I'm involved in is enough of a lure for you to buy something otherwise sight unseen. I'm glad that the book lived up to your expectations. For that title, so Media Lab has done a few what I'll call entries in the Everything I Need to Know series. We have something called Everything I Need to Know I Learned from Dolly Parton. We have an Everything I Need to Know I Learned from Betty White. There's an
amazing.
Everything I Need to Know I Learned from Bruce Springsteen. We also have a similar line of titles featuring John Wayne, the John Wayne Code as an example. There's a hunger for point of like personal improvement essays through the lens of a specific niche interest or celebrity. The celebrity stuff proven easy to understand. Oh, that guy seems like they have their life together. I would like to emulate them in some way, shape, or form. But I was playing a lot of D&D. I was writing a lot of RPG related content. And I think the book started for me thinking about individuals in my life as being on the ability score spectrum. And just kind of analyzing people in that way, like, oh, that guy's high intelligence, low wisdom, or that guy's high strength, low con, like,
That's
you
great.
know what I mean? And just thinking of people in that way and recognizing, oh, within that, some people have different skills that they're proficient in. And that guy's really, really great at performance, really terrible at persuasion. What's the distinction between those two? What does that even mean? Being recognizing someone is incredibly insightful, but not necessarily good at things like recall in terms of their history or their religion or whatever. And so the more I started thinking about people in terms of the 5e character sheet, the more I recognized that it was a useful rubric for analyzing my own approach to life. What is my what's how can I min-max my approach to life, right? Because I was reading a lot of blogs and trying to make sure that my character was like up to snuff and more accurately trying to make sure that my players that I was DMing for were getting their comeuppance, their most deserved retribution as they continually thwarted all of my plans left and right. So really just investing in trying to figure that stuff out. I recognized that there's so many lessons that I've taken into my own life that I've learned playing various RPGs over the years. And then I was like, oh, I should pitch this as an Everything I Need to Know title because there's just so much meat on that bone. I started thinking about people as character classes, and it became kind of a game for me. Like, oh, what's the lesson you can draw from, I don't know, a barbarian? It's like, well, anger can actually be useful. So often we're told anger is something you should tamp down and not use in a public forum, but actually anger has utility if it's channeled correctly. And I think that entry wrote itself when I analyzed in 5e that you activate your rage as a bonus action. It's not an action. Action is something else. You can't just be angry. That's not an action. Doing something is what the world requires. Being angry is this other thing. And so I was like, oh, there's actually some legit life advice that can be gleaned out of that simple statement. And the more I thought about that, the more I thought about, well, there's in-game lessons, there's like the class-based lessons, and then there's just other stuff that I've learned at the table dealing with people, like understanding how to share the spotlight, understanding when it's actually this is a mission that's perfect for the rogue, and I don't need to like just cast fireball all the time as a wizard. Like, let's let this person shine every now and again. Underestimating the value of a short rest. Now that I am a new father, I take short rests all the time. That is, there's value in it. And so, kind of just penciling in these little ideas, I really it came together very fast as a book because there was so much content I could choose from to really develop. It was just such a broad, I felt spoiled for choice in a lot of ways. And then it became a question of executing and making it work. So that's what I did over time.
I thought you handled anger really stood out. I was, I mean, that was a harder one, I thought, of all the topics you addressed across the book, and I was impressed with how you handled anger, like you were saying, and how you looked at that as a strength in moderation, right? Like there are other ways you could have gone, and that stood out. So the book is essentially divided into among classes, then monsters, then magic. I mean, this is a very rough summary, but right.
There's four sections. There's what I call classy advice, which is 13-ish lessons from basically how to live your life like a wizard. What does that mean? How to live your life like a warlock? What does that mean? And then again, some easier than others. I was like, rogues, they're criminals. I don't want to tell people how to be criminals. But I looked at it, I was like, oh, actually what they are is just people who recognize that when you have an opening, you really need to exploit it. And that's not a crime. That's the first section. The second section is I think it's called Tips from the Table. I know it's called that, I remember. And that's like practical lessons that you can apply if you've played D&D for a few years or even just a session or two. Stuff that you've learned playing RPGs with your friends. I explain how Dungeons and Dragons and other RPGs explain the economy. There's a passage on the hero's journey and how that's the basic premise of a lot of these games and how we can apply that to our own life, recognizing that we're not necessarily the main character of the world, even though we think we are. There's a whole run on bias and why we think we can kill giant monsters in real life, and I talk about Dunning-Kruger in that context.
Yeah, that was great.
There's the third section, which is about real-world monsters, which is probably my favorite section in the book, where I just analyze the types of problems that we face as human beings and tried to translate them into a kind of Volo's Guide to Monsters sort of narrative description of things like the many-headed hydra of personal finance or an internet troll or a dragon, those projects that just seem to creep on forever, even though you think you can slay them over the weekend. And then the final section is practical magic, which is just generally useful practices you can engage in or products you can buy. Or curses. There are some curses that we deal with as human beings, and I wrote them as if they were in like a player's handbook. I wrote up spells and stat block suggestions and stuff. And some of those things you can port over into your games. I tried to style them in a way that would be easy to put them into your campaigns if you're running them. There's one creature called the Shadow of Doubt, which is nasty. Really, really lovely monster that I've had just plaguing one member of an ongoing campaign that I have, because every time he starts to doubt himself, he spawns one of these creatures and they have to
Oh,
deal with
that's
it as a party.
brilliant.
It just kind of emerges from him and they have to deal with it. And it can infect other people because doubt is contagious in a lot of contexts. So yeah, it's awesome. And then the illustrator that we work with, Chris Seaman, as you mentioned, has a background with Magic the Gathering. He's done stuff for D&D. He's done all kinds of really killer creature concepts. So to have him engage with some of that material and let his brain run wild a little bit was really fun to watch.
The I
Well, before
laughed.
you do that,
Oh,
Jason, I want to say two things, if you don't mind. And I don't mean to cut you off. One, when I first read your book, I realized that I could finally classify Jason as high intelligence, high wisdom, low charisma.
Oh, it happens to the best of us.
talk of and the worst of us. I mean, talk about obvious, but go on.
No, okay, I joke. But what I found in reading it is I have
But 20
learned.
strength, obviously, all three of us. 20
Oh,
strength, just
obvious. Oh,
crushing
yeah.
it. Just crushing it. Yeah.
My wife may disagree, but that's another discussion. I have found that people that I worked with who I have come to find out are gamers, whether it is D&D or a Pathfinder or Dungeon World or a Burning Wheel or whatever the case is. I told them to grab it and read it just because it's funny how it allows you to put perspective on the gaming, but it really, when I read it and when a friend of mine that I worked with read it, he goes, okay, that really puts a different perspective on how I have functioned in business. Not that I am
Yeah.
terrible or superior. It's just, it allows me, it gives me a different rubric to kind of informally measure folks because it allows me then to play to their strengths, which is what you do as a DM or what you're trying to do as
Right.
a team.
One of the things I love about RPGs, most of them reinforce the importance of teamwork and collaboration, but they also have a ability score system in some way, shape, or form that forces you to choose what you want to be bad at. You might not be make that you might not make that choice willingly, but at the end of the day, you're going to have a statistic that's your dump stat, and the sooner you can recognize what your dump stat is in real life, the more you can lean into the things that you're good at, but also the more you can work to improve that thing that is ultimately your liability. That's all useful information, I think, on the self-help side. But what it also these games also force you to do is find somebody who is good at the thing that you're not great at, empower them to help you work together, synergize with one another so that you can become a impactful group of people or an impactful small company or a charity organization that's working for the greater good, like whatever it is. You have to meet people where they are and find not necessarily the good in them, but find what they are good at, because you can find really great people who are out there to do nothing but lawful evil takeover type stuff. You still want to find good people in terms of their skill. I think that the generally these games reinforce the idea that you have to build a team, you have to collaborate. And then there's also the dice aspect of things, which is it doesn't matter how much planning you do. At the end of the day, somebody's going to roll a one. Somebody's going to like absolutely tank it on a saving throw, and it's going to change everything that you have in place for yourself. The God Chaos is real. It's a real entity, and more so than any other god I have ever prayed to. It is a god I believe in. And I think that the sooner you recognize that and try to do what you can to kind of mitigate your exposure to downside connected to that entity, the better. Whether that means having a go bag, whether that means having like a weird, I don't know, backup plan or even just an emergency savings fund. You can invest in that. That's a good idea, I think.
In that regard, as much as I enjoyed the whole book, and I did, and I was impressed with how it really did shift as you went through those sections, like as a reader, like the focus really is shifting. But the humor was consistent. Like, I swear to God, I laughed out loud at some point or other reading through every class. And a lot of those monsters, by the time I got into the magic and the curses and whatnot, I kept thinking to myself, Jeff is clearly a man who has been in too many meetings.
I have been in a lot of meetings.
Especially those stat blocks on some of those monsters. Like, there's no way one can escape, no
Yeah.
matter how they roll.
Some of them are bad. There was I think it's the FOMO swarm. I wrote that while being
That was
inundated
hilarious.
with notifications and things like that. 'Cause even when you try
So
to do the
good.
right thing, you're just getting
I
that
could
pull
think of
is
so many
there.
people in my life. It's like, oh, this
Yeah.
is them and they're losing. Yeah.
Some people lose. The ghost of nostalgia is very
That
real.
was good.
I know people who have lost time, who have lost years of their life to that lich-like entity that just all it wants for you is for you to live in the past. And so some of the entries Just like anything else, when you're riding a low CR creature, like the stakes are lower and you can have more fun and more jokes. But like something like that, a thing that can really create a sense of stasis in people's lives, there's a seriousness that comes along with that. There's a real threat that comes along with that, that I think in terms of authoring it and trying to present it in a way that helps communicate the danger of that. In some areas, I tried to lighten up some of the humor and add a little bit of gravitas. That's not my skill set. I have a negative two in gravitas. So I try to avoid those checks when I can.
Yeah, but you clearly rolled with advantage with the non sequiturs because throughout the book, I'd be reading and then there'd just be this one little quip, like the shortest sentence, and I'd laugh out loud because it's like, okay, that's clever. That just nails it on the head. It reminds us that we're real people. We're still reading about RPGs, and now we're back. The part that I most enjoyed in the whole book, and I thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing. The part that I most enjoyed was the three-page introduction.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
And I enjoyed it because I thought that was interesting. I thought, and I don't want to give it all away, but in the introduction,
No, please read it. Start from the
in the
beginning.
beginning, that hits it close on the head. You essentially contextualize what's coming, right? You put it in both historical and personal context. And kind of toe that line of just enough insight is here's where you're coming from. And like I remember our conversation. Like I was reading that, and I was like, this is very much the conversation with you we had in October of 21, much of it off air, not just on air. And I thought, and you I was com I mean, honestly, I was completely hooked. Like I was all in after reading the intro, because I thought, I know, I mean, we'd met you before, we talked to you before, so we kind of knew, but like, I know where you're coming from because you've set it up. You're being very honest and very respectful at the same time. And you're calling it as you see it. And now let's jump in. And I just, because you're a deep guy with a complex history, like in a good way, right? And you've thought about all this, obviously, because it comes out of this book. I thought that's really cool. That really, this isn't just something fluffy and fun coming. This is something that probably is going to have some gravitas. And I do think in a good way, right? Not in a sobering or a slowing way. I do think there's gravitas throughout this. But I think it's because of how you set that up.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, I think we're all deep in our own way. I think everybody has a history in the same way that I say I think I know. There's a piece in the book called Everybody Has a Backstory. And in RPGs, it's important to establish where you've come from. But I don't think where you've come from is nearly as important as where you are in terms of RPGs. And I also don't think where you are is necessarily as important as where you're going. So that's gameplay. But I also think that's true of real life. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about my past because I will not be a victim of the ghost of nostalgia. I don't think about my past as much as other people in my life, a lot of people use their past as a reference point. And I don't know if it's the fact that I have ADD and I'm just very like, I'm in the present, but I'm in the present like 10 lanes and 50 colors. I'm not great at the future. I'm not great at the past. I don't remember what I had for breakfast today. Probably because I don't eat breakfast, but it's regardless. When I wrote the intro, I really tried to think about what you asked earlier, like, why did you want to write this book? And I think part of it is where we are right now in our present is in a culture that consistently is regressing across the board in ways that are without making like a big deal out of it and without making this a political discussion, terrifying to me. And I don't mean that to sound like I'm an alarmist. I just mean like so many conversations that I thought we had culturally about the value of books and the value of information are being rehashed without context. Say what you want about the Harry Potter series. Like, I don't think that we need to light those books on fire. And we did that 20 years ago and people were burning them. Like, I just don't understand. I don't understand cultures that burn books. I just don't get it. Don't read them. If you don't like them, don't read them. So when I hear people say like D&D is satanic, it just reminds me of a time in my life when I grew up and people thought that's what people thought that it was.
1984 called, they want their story back.
And it's just interesting because I see those same people, that same type of person who's disinterested in seeing the value in something that they might on its face, what they might find disagreeable, rather than meeting it where it is and trying to learn from it, they dismiss it because it makes them uncomfortable for whatever reason. And I think that's a really, really terrible trend. And we've glommed onto it because our media ecosystems are so niche now. Everything is curated. Your news is curated. Your entertainment is curated. You can't sign on to Hulu and not see stuff that's recommended for you before the stuff that you already told them you want to watch. I don't know why that is, but they wanna tell you what they think you'll enjoy rather than like what's happening in the world. And so I just tried to communicate where I was coming from and why I felt like games like D&D, why role playing today, I think, is a vital tool, and that play and collaborative storytelling have had such an impact on my life, and they've made me a better human being. And I think that that's such a net positive, that anything else that people might find disagreeable about it, like, I don't know, there's like demons or devils in it. Like, who cares? There are demons and devils in the Bible. What are we talking about? Anyway, that's my
No, I
soapbox.
I think that's great.
It's
Yeah,
no, no.
please.
This is, I think this is an important point, and it kind of leads me to a question because, in many cases, let's be honest, and there's a lot of people like this where we can, like, the three of us could sit down and talk about things of, where we have a very, we differ in opinion a lot in many ways. Jason and I, that's how
Sure.
our friendship started, was talking about areas where we differed in opinion. No one wants to do that. Fear is, and again, I'm dancing on that political line, but fear is so prevalent now that it bleeds over into people being afraid of books. It bleeds over into people being afraid of topics, et cetera. With you, working in the field, even beyond writing, how are you? I don't even know the right way to ask this question because it's a tough one, but are you seeing ways personally where you are trying to address this in a positive way, or is it, beyond this book, is this something where, it's a, unfortunately, it's an insurmountable thing? I don't know how, I'm not wording this right, Jason. If you have a better way of saying it, let me know. But
Do
are you?
you, if I'm understanding your question, it sounds like you're asking like, America's at a crisis point and people are thinking about this, that, and the other, and whatever. If you watch any news channel at any point in time, you will hear that we are a country divided. And are you asking me how I am addressing that reality and still trying to create content for the general audience? Or
Yeah, I
is it
was gonna
something
say,
else?
you kind of hit it. As a content creator, are you encountering roadblocks or challenges just because of how we seem to have regressed, even beyond this book? I'm kind of broadening the question beyond the book, in other words.
Well, I do think that overall, books are becoming more niche.
Interesting.
that you just see, like, people are placing less of a value on a book than they magazines. I also work in magazine publishing. People are old media, our media ecosystem is evaporating before our very eyes because the systems that kept it, that were the lifeblood of its very ex like the reason it existed, are being diverted to other places. So magazines in particular, if you bought a copy of Sports Illustrated 30 years ago, you were buying it for the sports journalism, and they had incredible sports journalists. They also had really solid advertising because they had a massive readership and a really killer pass along readership. Like, it's at the dentist, it's at every dentist office in the country. And so as once the internet arrived and people were online for free, they didn't have paywalls. They just had websites. And they were giving away their magazine for free. And that they trained their readership to go to sportsillustrated.com and read stuff for free rather than pay $2.99 or $3.99, whatever it was, an issue. So ad dollars slowly but surely started moving where the eyeballs were. They started going online. But people, once they realized, oh no, we need to start charging people for content, people stopped going because all the readers are trained to get it for free. So if you go on Reddit and you click a link that someone's posted, the number one comment is can't read it, paywall. Like every single, it doesn't matter what story it is. It's just that's the reality. And people are mad. People are mad that they have to pay for journalism. People are mad that they have to pay for content because the internet user has been trained to, everything's free. Regardless, it's just how it is. And so, newspapers folded. They lost their classified ads. They couldn't support themselves. So journalism folded in on itself. Guys, this is a super uplifting conversation. The quality of journalism diminished because you couldn't afford to pay good journalists. Now you can't make splashy headlines or win awards because you can't do good stories. And so now the value of your paper has diminished because you aren't delivering the same quality of content that you used to deliver. And so it's just this like slow entropy of that industry. But what it has evolved into is saying, okay, who is willing to pay for a magazine? Who is willing to pay for a story? Who is willing to pay for content? And it's people who have very niche interests, who want to invest in something that they care about. Those are the people that you can target. There are, by virtue of Facebook profiles, there are lists of people who care about Star Trek, and you can get their names and you know where they live and you can see how old they are. And you can say, okay, these are people who care about this thing. Should we do a magazine celebrating this thing they care about? There certainly are millions of them. Yes, the answer is yes. And so you do it. And so
Awesome.
that's driving book publishing in a lot of ways because you can see who cares about stuff? You can see that there are millions of people who play D&D, millions of them. Are they underserved? Are they not getting the content that they want or need or desire? If so, how can we provide that to them? Can we make a book that makes being a DM easier? There are millions of players, thousands of DMs. How can we grow the thousands into a number that can cater to these millions of players? So that's the question that we asked ourselves as a company. That's what we started to try to deliver on is tools that can make you a better DM, a better player. And in the case of everything I need to know about, I learned from RPGs, a better person.
It
See,
had to
I
be done. It
apologize.
had to
Seamless
be done.
transition. Seamless.
Nice.
That was I sent you probably off in a direction you didn't necessarily expect to go,
No, but
but
that's good. That's good.
as a publisher and a writer, just in this environment, like you said, people skip the LA Times because you got to pay a paywall. Boston, Globe, New York Times, all of them, Wall Street Journal.
Well, magazines used to break news. Newspapers used to tell you what happened yesterday. Magazines used to break news. Like we embedded and we got this really great interview, or we've got this expose or whatever. That's where they spent their money. Or they were glossy, like, hey, here's a preview of a new movie that we want to see or whatever. The internet does that now. The internet does that today. Stuff that happened today, you can learn about
Yeah,
today
it's true.
on the internet.
Yeah.
And so there, it's just harder. It's harder to make a name for yourself and have a reason. And so increasingly what magazine publishers and also books is they've recognized that the value of print product is its collectible nature or its reference.
Right.
Having something that you can always go back to, you know where it is, you have a physical copy, you can highlight it,
Right.
you can, it's already printed for you.
That makes sense.
So you don't have to go to Kinko's. It's not a PDF that you have to scan and whatever. You look at some companies like Wizards of the Coast is choosing to do less publishing. They're reducing on the publishing side because they're really invested in player access, the stuff on their phone. You don't need to have the player's handbook. You need to know what your character sheet says. That's what they've decided. We've got an algorithm and a formula that will tell you what your stats are. If you just click a couple buttons, you don't need to know, you don't need to see how the sausage is made. You just want to eat the hot dog. And the player's handbook is like a lot of how the sausage is made. And so they've just made a calculation that we don't need to make as many of these. People aren't going to buy as many of these.
It'll be
And they
interesting to
may be
see
right.
if
I
the
don't
yeah,
know.
it'll be interesting to see how the market responds, right? Like what are they right? Are they
I
right
have no
enough?
idea. I hope there's a part of me that hopes they're wrong, right? I hope that that people will continue buying books, but if they are right, I still think that there are plenty of people who will buy books. And because I am not in the subscription-based app business, I will benefit, right? People who love books will continue buying our books. That'll be great. I'd love that. But I don't think our books are a replacement for the stuff that they produce. Our whole goal is to supplement what they do and what other RPG creators are making, so that we can help GMs and players fill out these spaces on a weekly basis.
Don't
Because
stop.
there's just
Don't
too much.
stop.
Yeah,
Don't
it's
stop
such
writing.
cool.
Don't stop publishing. You know, you're the
Such good
random
stuff.
encounters and all that. That helped me as a novice GM. I know that, you know, I'm not trying to put you on a pedestal or, but
No.
the material was
But
extraordinarily helpful to me.
try.
Okay.
I'll grab a step ladder. Let's
Okay,
go.
I'm gonna wave hands here and but no, I you have a great point, and Jason and I are fans of the printed word. You know,
Yeah, big time.
I have my Kindle, but nothing beats, you know, like your book. I needed a printed copy. I like being able to read it, putting it back on the shelf, reference it, much like with the random books that you and Media Lab have done. So,
Okay,
yeah.
so we're in a moment, Jeff. We're gonna let you go because we are not going to be what comes between you and maybe just a few minutes of quiet. Maybe.
Yeah,
I know we're being optimistic.
she's
Oh, well
passed out. So
done. Oh my God. What a
everything after
wonderful,
this
what
is
a
my time.
wonderful child.
So,
Okay,
yeah, she's great.
so let me turn it around before I let you go. Let me turn it around. So to go, taking from the book, everything I need to know, I learned from RPGs. If in your life right now, as a writer, as a leader, as a spouse, as a newly minted father, if you could pick, like these days, right now in your life, if you could pick from one of the spells or the mundane magic items in your book these past days, what would you most like to have?
So for the spells, there's a spell called Delegate, that I've been using a lot more lately.
Nice, good. At work, I
That
assume, not at home.
both
Oh.
even at home, like recognizing, and it's not a spell, but just kind of again, the thing that we mentioned earlier. This is you're a 20, you're a plus five bonus in diaper changing. I'm a plus five in cooking.
Nice.
I'm gonna cook. I'm not allowed to do laundry. I'm not allowed to do it. So just looking at the balance of work, looking at what everybody's carrying and saying, okay, this person, how can we lighten the load a little bit? So delegate is a spell that allows you to look at your people and kind of
Like
give
it.
it's basically command, but like with your allies.
Yeah.
But if they succeed, there's a bonus to their success
Nice.
alongside of that. And then in terms of a magic item, man, there are a few. Sometimes I wish I had a hat of disguise bad hair day, because I feel like my situation is changing on a daily basis. My wife already has a mom bag of holding. It's just this massive diaper bag that has literally anything you can imagine inside of it. Which is the way I wrote that spell up. You basically name something, and if you roll higher than a 10, it's in the bag.
Yeah, that was so
It's a
good.
mundane magic item. There's another spell called Personal Day that I think would be really nice. Where
Good
you
luck with
just, it
that.
doesn't matter what's happening in the world, you take a personal day. And it's very similar to Hero's Feast, but without the diamonds cost. Those are the things that I think would be most useful at the moment. There is a, I forget what it's called. I think it's a Belt of the Champion. The Belt of the Undisputed Champion, I think would be cool because it's a +3 weapon that you can use. You have to carry it over your shoulder all the time, and it's basically a WWE championship belt. But every month, somebody, a gladiator, shows up and challenges you to try to take it, which I think would just be fun. I like challenges every now and again. So those are the things. But I think I don't know. I mean, I'd
That's
take
great.
anything, any little bit of magic at this point. I would take wish. Can I cast wish on myself? There's plenty of things I could do with that spell. But what about you? Is there anything that you saw that you were like, ooh, I gotta have one of those? It's hard because there's so many.
The one that made me chuckle the most because I never had it, I think, is the wand of because I told you so, or wand of because I said so. I always thought, like, what was it? I was listening to an interview, I don't know, a year and a half ago now, Planetary Radio with Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian. And he was asked, it was really, I mean, if you ever heard him speak, he's wickedly intelligent and he's really funny and he just seems very kind. And so he'll say stuff, but it's in jest. And he was asked by the interviewer something about, clearly there were a couple pieces in your books where he kind of fudged the science. And his response, you could hear him smiling. His response was something like, those were the moments in my books where I used the technology. Shut up, I said so. And then that's the whole conversation. And I thought, child rearing, the wand of because I said so, like, or I told you so, that boy, that sounds useful. I never went down that
Mine
route.
can't talk right now,
Give
so
it time.
she can't quite talk yet, so I haven't needed it.
No,
But
I never
maybe in a
quite
few
used it.
years.
Yeah, and I probably wouldn't have, but it still looked so good on paper.
I tried, but mine was
It's OP.
broken. I tried it many, many
Yeah,
times,
no.
and it just didn't stick with anyone in this house. So I've given, this is where I told you I mellow. I just am like, all right, well, kid gets a
Well,
kid, the quiet little kid gets a motorcycle, and all of a sudden after 6 months is
oh my
like, yeah,
God.
this is, I don't know if I want to do this. I'm like, well, I told you so,
They're resilient. They are
yeah.
resilient. I would say that for me, the thing I don't want to fall victim to is the curse of willful ignorance. That would for me be one of the worst curses. It's just kind of choosing a lack of curiosity, building a insulated world around myself where I don't do what I can to observe objective reality and then make a decision from there. So that would, I guess, be a way to close out. It's like, don't fall victim to that, America,
We're gonna
as
leave
we
it.
dive
That's, oh
into the
man.
future.
I just want to say,
Yes.
as we wrap up,
Yes.
congratulations. You have a little one at home.
Yeah.
Thank
That's
you.
so
going to be
cool.
so life changing, and it probably already has been in a positive way. No matter how tired one we can get, down the road, we'll look back and go, I remember being tired then. But I survived it. But just it will be fun to, we need to have you back on again, but
Well,
not wait 2.5 years to do it.
although we look forward to your next book in 7 to 8 years. No, just
Yeah, I mean, if I had a follow-up to this one, we do have the Game Master's Book of More Random Encounters coming out in July,
Oh, that's great.
which is very exciting. There's some stuff in there. We took everything you love about the Game Master's Book of Random Encounters, and we said, how can we add more to this? And so more meant more extra planar locations. There's an entire section of stuff that could help you if you're running a Starfinder or Spelljammer campaign. There's just a
Cool.
bunch of like outer space stuff.
Oh, nice.
There's a smuggler crew generator. There's a airship builder. There's all kinds of
Yes.
weird and cool, funky stuff in there. Find it, pre-order it now.
Yeah,
It's
serious. I don't know how. I don't know how you do this. I don't know how you and the others keep coming up with so. I just don't know how you do it. It's so clever.
Got to do something.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't
Jeff.
know how you come up with a lesson plan every day. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah,
I,
fair. I mean,
it's what you do. It's
yeah.
you look at it, you say, I know how to do this, and you just do it.
So cool.
And
Yeah.
that's just how it is.
Well, we are grateful that you are still keeping doing it. That's
Yeah.
great.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the support. And thanks again for having me on.
As we head over and grab our tea or coffee and sit down at Audubon Court, the only thing that is in that his bio didn't have is the fact that he has a little one at home. Now,
Hot
he's
off
a
the
new dad.
presses.
Yeah,
Hot
he's
off
in
the presses. Yeah.
he,
So,
he's a
Jeff,
yeah.
man, thank you. Yeah. Jay, you all couldn't see this, but he looked tired.
Yeah.
And we get it. Man, do we
But
get
what
it.
the funny thing is, he looked tired, but he had the same
Yeah.
zest and
Yeah.
effervescence that he had in
Yeah.
episode 20. So Jeff, thank you so much. I've been a fan of your books going back to the original
Oh,
one that
man.
came out, which is what kind of drove us to ask
One of
you
the things. Yeah.
to join us.
And one of the things that got us back into playing
Yes.
a few years ago now, several years ago now.
Yes. So what's on your mind these days is like you and I would sit at Audubon. We wouldn't necessarily be talking about books when we were there.
No,
We would talk
rarely.
about anything and everything. And we do still, it's just over Zoom or whatever, or the
Yep.
phone. What's been on your mind or on your desk?
It's been what's on my TV slash laptop.
Okay.
So as this episode drops, it's been just about a month since the full first trailer drop for Star Wars: The Acolyte.
Yes.
And you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this yet as we're
No.
recording. We'll do that off air.
Other than the
But
text you sent
yeah, other than the
that
text I
had
sent,
it,
right.
which I think said, and I've been a little critical of Lucasfilm about trying to bridge new territory.
Yeah.
This goes back far enough that I'm interested.
This is High Republic. So this is like our audience doesn't know, but this is High Republic era. The story is set to take place about 100 years prior to the prequels, and the High Republic era is about 100 to 500 years before the prequels. So yeah, I'm with you, Brad. We've talked about this a lot on Dice and Mind. You and I have talked a ton about this offline. Some of the things Lucasfilm has done, I've loved. Some of the things I have not. I've enjoyed it all. This really piques my interest. This might be okay, but I think this has the potential to really, really advance canon, advance the story. And can we just get on with the notion of balance in the force looking grayish? Fingers crossed. I know, fingers crossed.
I raise my hands because you know me. I've been all about the Gray Jedi going back to Rebels.
Yep. This is, I think, our first chance to see that.
And I what I think I figured out in thinking about this, what didn't attract me as much when shows didn't drive are driven by Jedi, they don't tend to interest me as much. I for what are better or worse, it's just the way it is. So I liked Obi-Wan. A lot of people were more critical of it. I really liked it. The Acolyte, you know, just the preview and seeing all the different lightsabers, I'm like, okay, we're gonna see some Jedi action and the politics of the Jedi and everything. And I did like a lot of the comments because I think it was Carrie Ann Moss is in it, and ever and
Oh my God, she makes a good Jedi.
yeah, but what's funny is they were, you know, the way the trailer started, everyone's like, I wonder if they loaded Star Wars into the Matrix.
Well,
You know?
yeah, I mean, seriously, because she's got that look.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know the same thing.
She looks like a badass Jedi. Mind my
It's
language,
oh
you
man,
know?
I'm so look I really am looking forward to this one. And my God, I cannot tell you how badly this is all making me want to play Star Wars Edge of the Empire.
I
It's
know you're an Edge of the Empire guy.
I mean, and
You know?
just any of the Fantasy Flight slash Edge Studio Star Wars. It doesn't have to be Edge of the Empire. It can be whatever. Like, because I've got, like, you had sent me
You have Force and Destiny, right?
you had sent me Force and Destiny, but then I've also got I'm looking over here. I have one of the, I think I have the whatever, the Knights of Dathomir or whatever. I have one of the, I mean, I've got a lot of material,
Well,
right? Eventually we'll circle back.
I will tease this. If there would be a way to play without breaking canon, because that's anything that you and I game
We never do that.
that is related to a series like Trek or Star Wars or
Yep, we
whatever.
don't do that.
We
Yep.
do not break or create alternate canon.
Nope.
If there is a way to play a Force and Destiny focused adventure that sits way back, maybe even early High Republic, where
Oh,
we
that's
aren't necess
interesting.
we weren't necessarily we're not going to break a lot of canon because it was a relatively
No,
stable
but
period.
yeah, we're gonna have to see the Acolyte first.
Yes, that's what I'm saying is we have to see how it plays out. But I think I would be really interested, even if it's playing a Padawan, in that
Scott, I hope you're
environment.
listening. I hope you're listening. We need to revisit this late summer after the series.
We'll gotta put a tack in that, and I'll put it on the note that I had that I used to put some other comments for that topic we were talking about before. So, for me, as we sit here, you know, I went through this real period where I really, when it was quiet, like when my wife works, you know, with our house, our offices are downstairs, family rooms upstairs, because I'm in between jobs, I tend to stay upstairs and stay out of her way because she's got a very busy job. But I've been doing a lot of reading and everything that was quiet, you know. And I just went through this period where I just needed to quiet, and I would read or watch videos or whatever the case is. I've been starting to put some TV or radio or satellite radio through the TV during the day. And I have been reading a lot more in kind of the tech industry and AI, just because, and we could have a whole separate episode, and so I won't dive deep here. But if we were sitting at the real Autobahn, if it still existed, I imagine we would have, if it were back in the day, we would be talking Macs and tech and computers for at least an hour. And then we would move to something like, you know, society or societal changes based off of AI. Those are the type of things that for whatever reason, I don't watch the news regularly anymore. I catch most of it online. That's been catching my attention.
Ditto.
And just, you know, we both have friends who are in the job search, and AI has come up in that. And so it's just fascinated me more.
It is.
From an RPG perspective, you know, we're doing the I got sidetracked with stuff again, herding cats. We still have our Trek game going. That's really been
Now, I next week I'm calling it.
yeah.
Next week we're playing.
Oh yeah, because we're gonna be ahead on our
Because we're gonna,
recording
yep, we
schedule.
have the time.
And
Yep.
let's be honest, the this recording comes out after our talk with Jim and Al. Was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Yesterday.
Yeah, as we record, yeah.
Yeah, my copy of the tactical campaign came from
Yeah.
Libifius. So I started looking, and I had the PDF, but nothing beats getting one of their books, getting a copy of the book. And I started perusing a little bit last night before I got tired. I'm thinking, in all honesty, and I haven't even told you this, there's a project you're having me work on, which we'll
Yep.
talk about in the future. I was thinking of actually like getting out of the house and going to Starbucks or something
There
like
it
that
is. Yeah.
with my laptop and
Nice.
my AirPods. I don't use the Apple ones. I use the
Yeah.
Sony or the Samsung ones, and do some writing
Good for you.
and maybe peruse that book a little bit more, but get
There it
out of
is.
the, you know, so.
Smart. All right, everybody. You know the deal. Thanks as always for being with us. Be well, stay well. We will see you in a couple of weeks.